So how's everybody doing?
Great.
Okay, now's where the fun starts. All right, what are those two parts of Daniel? Daniel 1 and 3 through 6?
The training?
Yeah, the practical stories of what it looks like when a man or woman believes that God's in control. Okay? And then 2 and 7 through 12? Visions of the future. Got it?
Yes.
Theme of Daniel, God rules the nations, do not fear. And like I said, the two sections are connected, although it's not really obvious at first. And honestly, we're kind of doing it backward. Because chapters 2 and 7 through 12 proves beyond any reasonable doubt that God rules the nations. Because God tells them the bad stuff that's going to happen and the good stuff that's going to happen, both before they happen. And then if you understand that God's in control, then when it's looking bad, you understand that God's in control. And you can say with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, you can say, but even if he does not. Okay? So we're going to go to Daniel chapter 2. All right? Here we go. Let's do it. In the second year of his reign, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams. His mind was troubled, and he could not sleep. So the king summoned the magicians, enchanters, sorcerers, and astrologers to tell him what he had dreamed. When they came in and stood before the king, he said to them, I have had a dream that troubles me, and I want to know what it means. Then the astrologers answered the king, may the king live forever. Tell the servants the dream, and we will interpret it. The king replied to the astrologers, this is what I have firmly decided. If you do not tell me what the dream was, and then interpret it, I'll have you cut to pieces, and your houses turn into piles of rubble. But if you tell me the dream and explain it, you will receive from me gifts and rewards and great honor. So tell me the dream and interpret it for me. Once more they replied, oh, let the king tell his servants the dream and then we'll interpret it. And the king answered, I know you're one of those charismatic, fake, miracle, prophecy people. I remember one time we had a brother who had a little bit of trouble and he ended up in a drug place. And the only way to visit him was to go to this Pentecostal church. And, you know, it was this revival. And I show up at 6, and it's like 10 o'clock. It's 4 hours later, you know. It's like, oh, my goodness. This guy gets up and starts prophesying. Oh, you're going to do this, you're going to do that. I'm like, do these people actually believe this stuff? I mean, really? This guy is lying through his teeth. Well, one thing for sure is Nebuchadnezzar knew these guys were a bunch of fakes. Right? He has this dream, and, you know, it's in the second year of his reign, 604 B.C. So the four hostages have only been there for about a year or so. And he wakes up from his dream. He says, oh, my gods. That's a joke. Okay. Oh, my gods. And he realizes this was no ordinary dream. He realized that this was a vision. So he's there, I have to know what this is about. So I need an actual prophet, not a faker. All right? And so these guys, you know, they're a bunch of religious hypocrites. No one can reveal to the king except the gods. And they don't live among men, right? Once more they replied, let the king tell his servants the dream and we'll interpret it. The king answered, I am certain that you're trying to gain time because you realize that this is what I have firmly decided. If you do not tell me the dream, there's only one penalty for you. You have conspired to tell me misleading and wicked things, hoping the situation will change. That's what I wanted to do at that meeting. I'm going to stand up and say, you're telling wicked and conspirational lies to these people. Come on. You don't really believe this stuff. But it wasn't my church, like I stay quiet. All right. So then tell me the dream, and I will know that you can interpret it for me. The astrologers answered the king, there is no one on earth who can do what the king asks. No king, however great and mighty, has ever asked such a thing of any magician or enchanter or astrologer. What the king asks is too difficult. No one can reveal it to the king except the gods, and they do not live among humans. Okay, now we finally know what's really going on, right? Because everybody knew it was a bunch of baloney. Yep. Many of our so-called charismatic friends are doing the same sort of thing. All right? This made the king so angry and furious that he ordered the executions of all the wise men of Babylon. So the decree was issued to put the wise men to death. The men were sent to look for Daniel and his friends, because Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were amongst this group of advisors, if you will, the astrologers and magicians and all those sort of things. All right, so when Arioch, verse 14, the commander of the king's guard, had gone out to put to death the wise men of Babylon, Daniel spoke to him with wisdom and tact. There you go. Always be prepared to give an answer, but do it with gentleness and respect. All right? He asked the king's officer, why did the king issue such a harsh decree? Arioch then explained the matter to Daniel. At this, Daniel went into the king and asked for time so he might interpret the dream for him. Then Daniel returned to his house, explained the matter to his friends, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. He urged them to plead for mercy from God, the God of heaven, concerning this mystery, so that he and his friends might not be executed with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. During the night, the mystery was revealed to Daniel in a vision. Then Daniel praised the God of heaven and said, praise be to the name of God forever and ever. Wisdom and power are his. He changes times and seasons. He deposes kings and he raises up others. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to the discerning. He reveals deep and hidden things. He knows what lies in darkness, and light dwells with him. I thank you and praise you, God of my ancestors. You have given me wisdom and power. You have made known to me what we've asked of you. You made known to us the dream of the king. So Daniel went to Arioch when the king had appointed to execute the wise men of Babylon, and said to him, do not execute the wise men of Babylon. Take me to the king. I'll interpret his dream for him. So Arioch took Daniel to the king at once and said, I have found a man among the exiles from Judah who can tell the king what his dream means. King asked Daniel, also known as Belteshazzar, are you able to tell me what I saw in my dream and interpret it? All right, remember, what do you have that you did not receive? And if you received it, why do you act as though you did not? Remember, Nebuchadnezzar said, isn't this great city that I built as my royal residence because of my great majesty? No. Daniel replied, no wise man, enchanter, magician, or diviner can explain to the king the mysteries asked about, but there is a God in heaven who reveals mysteries. He has shown King Nebuchadnezzar what will happen in the days to come. Your dream and the visions that pass through your mind as they were lying in bed are these. All right, I'm not going to read the dream. I'm going to read the interpretation of the dream. But the dream was of a giant statue. And by the way, what was it that Nebuchadnezzar built in chapter 3? A giant statue. Okay. That's kind of interesting. So he has this dream of a giant statue, head of gold, chest of silver, belly and thigh of bronze, legs of iron. One of the irons is mixed with clay, and etc. So let's see the interpretation. This was the dream, and now I will interpret to the king. You, your majesty, are the king of kings. The God of heaven has given you dominion and power and might and glory. In your hands he's placed all mankind. He's kind of buttering them up just a little bit because he's about to give them some really bad news. The God of heaven has given, in your hands he has placed all mankind, the beasts of the field, the birds of the sky. Wherever they live, he has made you rule over them all. You are the head of gold. All right? You are the head of gold. You, Babylon, are the head of gold. Now remember, I told you about the four kingdoms, right? Remember what they were? Let me see. Babylon. Oops. Okay. Persia. Greece. Rome. Okay. Got it? After you, another kingdom will arise inferior to yours. Okay, here's Babylon. Here's Babylon. Here's Persia. Would you say that would be an inferior kingdom to Babylon? All right, go back. Babylon, okay, you got most of Iraq, most of Syria, Jordan, Lebanon, Israel, okay? inferior to yours. All right, put it this way. Babylon was the greatest city. There was no city in Persia that was even close to the city of Babylon. So he's kind of being a little nice to our friend King Nebuchadnezzar, probably because he's being wise. Next will come a third kingdom, one of bronze. Okay, oops, there it is. One of bronze will rule over the whole earth. Finally, there'll be a fourth kingdom strong as iron. For iron breaks and smashes everything. And as iron breaks things to pieces, so will crush and break all the others. What was the greatest empire of the ancient world? Rome. How did Daniel know that? This prophecy is in 604 BC. In 604 BC, Rome was a minor village on the Tiber River that controlled, you know, a few square miles. All right? That's sort of cool. Alright? Just as you saw the feet and toes were partly of baked clay and partly of iron, so it will be a divided kingdom. Now, was Rome a divided kingdom? Was there like an Eastern Rome and a Western Rome? How did that work? Yeah! Alright? In 284 BC, Diocletian divided Rome into Eastern Rome and Western Rome. And after 395 AD, under Theodosian, from that time on, there was an Eastern Roman Empire, capital in Byzantium, and a Western Roman Empire, capital in Rome and later in Milan. Okay. How did Daniel know about that part of Rome, which happened 1,000 years after his time? All right. So it'll be a divided kingdom, yet it'll have some of the strength of iron in it, even as you saw iron mixed with clay. As the toes are partly iron and partly clay, so this kingdom will be partly strong and partly weak. So one of these divisions will be strong. The other one will fall apart almost right away. Is that what happened? Yeah. Of course, that's exactly what happened. Western Rome fell to the Huns in like 430 AD and completely fell, never to be reconstituted in 476 AD. But Eastern Rome, Byzantium, continued for 1,000 years. So what Daniel just did was he gave a Reader's Digest version. Wait, you guys don't even know what a Reader's Digest version is. I'm sorry. He gave a very, very brief summary of the history of the Near East for the next 2,000 years. That's pretty good. Like I said, the book of Daniel is a book whose genre has exactly one book, and that's Daniel, History of the Future. As the toes are partly iron and partly clay, so the skin will be partly strong and partly brittle. And just as you saw the iron mixed with baked clay, so the people have a mixture and will not remain united any more than iron mixes with clay. In the time of those kings, in the time of which kings? In the time of the Roman kings. The God of heaven will set up a kingdom that will never be destroyed, nor will be left to another people. It will crush all those kingdoms. It'll bring them to an end, but it itself will endure forever. That's the meaning of the vision of the rock cut out of the mountain, not by human hands, a rock that broke the iron, bronze, clay, silver, and gold to pieces. The great God has shown the king what will take place in the future. The dream is true. And its interpretation is trustworthy. And Nebuchadnezzar was like, oh my Yahweh, oh my Lord. Because it was true. It was the actual dream. Can you think of a kingdom? Let me see. We're talking what? I don't know. Second, third, fourth century AD. A kingdom that was established that's still around? that crushed Rome? Can you think of a kingdom that's been around for like 2,000 years? Yeah, okay, yeah, we know what we're talking about, right? It's about the kingdom of God, which, of course, was not established at that time. You know, the kingdom of God's always existed. But he's talking about the church. So that's pretty cool. Now, that's a pretty impressive prophecy. I'm telling you, that's nothing. Oh, compared to Daniel 7 and Daniel 8, that's like practically nothing. So remember that the head of gold, Babylon, the chest of silver, the Persia Mede Empire, a very unusual empire, in that it was a dual empire with sort of almost like two official kings. And then after that, of course, the greatest empire up till that time, which is the Empire of Alexander, of Greece under Alexander, the belly and thigh, and then the legs of Rome. All right, good. Daniel 7. God rules the nations. Do not fear. Okay, Daniel 7. All right, from the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon. All right, when did Belshazzar begin to reign? Now remember, there was Nebuchadnezzar, evil Merodach, and then Nabonidus. And then Nabonidus had his son, Belshazzar, rule as a regent, and he ruled for something like 12 years. So that's going to be right around 553 BC. So how long has Daniel been in captivity now? 553 BC. Can somebody do the math? 47 plus 6. All right. He's been, 53 years. Still faithful. Still speaking to the kings. This is no longer under Nebuchadnezzar. This is under Belshazzar. All right. In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel had a dream and visions passed through his mind as he was lying in bed. He wrote down the substance of his dream and we have it right here. Daniel said, "In my vision, at night I looked, and there before me were four winds of heaven, churning up the great sea." Now, four great beasts, each different from the other, came up out of the sea. So we're going to have the vision of the four beasts. So we have the vision of the statue with four parts, gold, silver, bronze, iron. Then we're going to have these four beasts. These are the first three beasts. The first one is going to be the lion. Second one is going to be the bear. All right, let's read it. Okay, good. "The first one was like a lion. It had the wings of an eagle. I watched until its wings were torn off. It was lifted from the ground so that it stood on 2 feet like a human being, and the mind of human was given to it." So this is Babylon. And just like the bald eagle for America, for Babylon, it was the lion. What's this thing about it standing up and be giving a heart like a man? That's about the fact that Nebuchadnezzar essentially became a believer in Jehovah. That's the first beast. "And there before me was a second beast which looked like a bear." This reminds me of the Flintstones cartoon. Again, a reference to which you have no connection. I apologize. "It was raised up on one of its sides, and it had three ribs in its mouth between its teeth. It was told, 'Get up and eat your fill.'" Now, this is Persia Media. And the kingdom of Persia absorbed, guess how many great empires? You want to guess?
Three.
Exactly. It absorbed Babylon. It absorbed Lydia. And it absorbed Egypt, the three great conquests of, actually it was Cyrus who conquered Babylon and Lydia, and it was his son Cambyses who conquered Egypt. All right? So that is the bear. Very strong. Three ribs, Lydia, Babylon, and Egypt. And the third beast is a leopard, right? After that I looked, and there before me was another beast, one that looked like a leopard. On its back it had four wings like those of a bird. This beast had four heads, and it was given authority to rule. So what are these four wings, and what are these four heads? Well, I'll tell you when we get to Daniel chapter 8. Because Daniel chapter 7 focuses on Rome, all right? And Daniel chapter 8 focuses on Greece. So just file that one aside. The three ribs of the bear are Lydia, Babylon, and Egypt, the three great empires conquered by Cyrus and his son Cambyses. And this third beast, Greece, has four wings and four heads. This is all apocalyptic stuff, but it has a very precise meaning. But I just say hold on to that one. Now, this vision is not about the lion, the bear, or the panther. This vision is about the fourth beast, the terrible beast. All right, I've got an artist's attempted rendering of that fourth beast. Okay. After that, in my vision at night, I looked, and there before me was a fourth beast, a terrifying and frightening and very powerful beast. It had large iron teeth. That's a hint that this beast is the fourth beast of the statue. Large iron teeth. All right. And it devoured its victims. It trampled underfoot whatever was left. It was different from other former beasts, and it had 10 horns. Count it, 10. While I was thinking about the horns, there before me was another horn, a little horn, which came up among them. And three of the first horns were uprooted before it. This horn had eyes like the eyes of a human being and a mouth that spoke boastfully. Now imagine you're Daniel. It's like, I have to write this down. I mean, this is weird. I mean, have you ever read the book of Daniel? Do you ever wonder what the heck these 10 horns are, and what's that little horn? The little horn's going, and he's knocking down the other 3 horns. That's really weird stuff. All right. By the way, this is exactly what happened. Precisely. Precisely what happened. You read a history book, and you go, okay, great. Oh, you're reading a history book. It's just history book, you know, 600 and something years before it happened. All right. As I looked, thrones were set in place. The Ancient of Days took his seat. His clothing was as white as snow. The hair of his head was white like wool. His throne was flaming with fire. His wheels were all ablaze. Ezekiel chapter 1. A river of fire was flowing, coming out from before him. Thousands upon thousands attended him, 10,000 times 10,000 to before him. The court was seated. The books were opened. I continued to watch because of the boastful words. This little pipsqueak horn was like, I'm better than all you. I'm going to cut you. It's this obnoxious horn. I kept looking until the beast was slain, its body destroyed, and thrown into the blazing fire. The other beasts had been stripped of their authority, but were allowed to live for a little while. And I visioned, and I looked, and there before me was one like a son of man coming with the clouds of heaven. He approached the Ancient of Days, was led into his presence. I wonder who this could be. He was given authority, glory, and sovereign power. All authority under heaven and earth has been given to me. And all people, nations and peoples of every language worshipped him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion that will not pass away. And his kingdom is one that will never be destroyed. All right, so Daniel, he's like kind of mystified about what's going on. All right, so then God decides to help him out by giving him the interpretation. I, Daniel, was troubled in spirit, and the visions that passed through my mind disturbed me. I approached one of those standing there. I asked him the meaning of all this. So he told me, he gave me the interpretation of these things. The four great beasts are four kings, or kingdoms, if you will, that will arise from the earth. But the holy people of the Most High will receive the kingdom and will possess it forever. Yes, forever and ever. So apparently this is kind of a retelling of Daniel chapter 2, right? Okay. But a little bit more detail. Then I want to know the meaning of the fourth beast, which was different from all the others and most terrifying with its iron teeth, its bronze claws, the beast that crushed and devoured its victims and trampled underfoot whatever was left. I also want to know about the 10 horns on its head and about the other horn that came up before which 3 of them fell. The horn that looked more imposing than the others, that had eyes and a mouth that spoke boastfully. As I watched, his horn was waging war against the holy people and defeating them until the Ancient of Days came and pronounced judgment in favor of the holy people of the Most High, and the time came when they possessed the kingdom. He gave me this explanation. The fourth beast is a fourth kingdom. Earlier it said it's 4 kings. Now he's saying 4 kingdoms to clarify here. All right, that will appear on the earth. It will be different from all the others. It will devour the whole earth, trampling it down and crushing it. The 10 horns are 10 kings who will come from this kingdom. After them, another king will arise, different from the earlier ones. He will subdue 3 kings. He will speak against the Most High. He will oppress the holy people. He will try to change the set times and the laws. The holy people are delivered into his hands for a time, times, and half a time. But the court will sit, his power will be taken away and completely destroyed forever. Then the sovereignty, power, and greatness of all the kingdoms under heaven will be handed over to the holy people of the Most High. His kingdom will be an everlasting kingdom, and all rulers will worship and obey him. This is the end of the matter. I was deeply troubled, and my face turned pale, and I kept the matter to myself. Except he wrote it down. All right, so he said, the little beast, the one that boasted and knocked 3 others out, he tells us the meaning. Okay, these are kings. Now, did Rome have kings? Well, for about 650, 700 years, Rome had no kings. It was a republic. Now, there was a guy who tried to be king. His name was Julius Caesar, and they killed him. So the first king of Rome was Octavian, also known as Augustus, the king who was ruling when Jesus was born. All right? So let's count 10 kings. Augustus, Tiberius, Caligula, Claudius, Nero, Galba, Otho, Vitellius, Vespasian, Titus. The 11th king, that's the pipsqueak horn. The 11th king, his name is Domitian. And Domitian was the first Roman king who made Christianity illegal. He was the one who had John sent to Patmos. He was the first one to persecute the church. Nero had a bad day one day, and if you were one of the Christians killed in Rome, you would think that that was major, but that was just an outbreak for a few weeks, and that was it. He did not systematically persecute the church. Now, it mentions about him taking out 3 other kings, right? So, the first great persecutor of the church, according to Daniel, in 558 BC, 600 years before the events, 600 years. Wait a minute. What was happening here in California 600 years ago? All right. Wait a minute. Had Columbus sailed the ocean blue at that point? No. Columbus had not even landed in the New World 600 years ago. There's a lot of stuff happening, right? The Native Americans are doing all kinds of great stuff. Not that we have a whole lot of record of it, right? Okay. All right. Well, it turns out that Nero died. And Nero was the last of the Julian-Claudian line, if you will. So Nero dies. All right. This thing doesn't work very well on the screen. All right, great. Notice Galba, Otho, and Vitellius each ruled 3 within about a year or so. So when Nero died, Vespasian was at Jerusalem. In the process, he'd already put Jerusalem under siege, as prophesied in Daniel 9, by the way. So Vespasian raced back to Rome. It took several months, of course, and he left his son Titus behind. See that Titus, the 10th horn? And Titus completed the conquest of Jerusalem in 70 AD. In the meantime, Vespasian had another son. His name was Domitian. And Domitian was back in Rome the whole time. And while Vespasian was racing back to Rome, Domitian was involved in overthrowing Otho, Vitellius, and Galba. So can you think of any other important persons in history who replaced three former rulers? Three. All right, so this 11th horn took out horn number, was it 6, 7, and 8? All right, the 11th horn helped to take out horns number 6, 7, and 8. All right, that's what Daniel said. That's pretty precise, and that's also pretty, like, surprising. I think I used the example. Imagine I said, yeah, in the year 2670, Ecuador is going to be the strongest country in the entire world, and a guy named Bill is going to be the king of Ecuador. You go, yeah, right, as if that could ever happen. How about this ever happening? But then he says a few more things about Domitian, which are pretty cool. He's waging war against the saints, of course. Now imagine you're one of those saints, and war is being waged against you. All right? That's kind of what the book of Revelation was written about. It was written to people undergoing this same persecution that Daniel's talking about. How are you feeling when your fellow parishioners are being thrown in prison, some of them even beheaded? What are you tempted to think? What are you tempted to think when you guys go out and share with hundreds of people and nobody gets baptized? In fact, you're being persecuted. A few people have left the church. They're no longer faithful to God. And you're just beginning to wonder, what are you thinking?
God's not with us.
Yeah, you're thinking, God has abandoned me. I mean, oh my goodness. So what do you think the Christians in the 90s AD were thinking when Domitian went after them? Well, they had one thing. They could read Daniel. Do you think the early Christians could count to 11?
Yeah.
Do you think they could do that? Do you think they could, okay, Galba, Otho, and Vitellius. Okay, Galba, Otho, okay. Then what's God say is going to happen to the mission? I mean, right? God's going to eventually take him out. All right, so that's sort of cool. Yeah. He subdues three kings, Galba, Otho, and Vitellius. All right? And then it says a few things. It says that he was very boastful. All right? Domitian was sort of the paradigmatic, you know, in Rome they'd say, that person's a Domitian. That means a prideful jerk. All right? Let's see here. Am I losing power? There we go. There's Domitian. Yes, in fact, he was the first Roman emperor to demand to be addressed as my Lord God Domitian. That he demanded to be addressed as my Lord God Domitian. And it says in this passage that he attempted to change the set times. That's exactly what he did. All right, did you ever notice, you know, November, all right, November, that means nine. December means 10. Do you ever notice December? Wait a minute, that's the 12th month, right? That's the 12th month, but we call it December 10. Right? Do you ever notice that? Like September 7, it's the 9th month. Do you ever wonder about that? So why do we call the 9th month September, which means 7? Well, it's because somebody added July, named after Julius Caesar, and August, named after Augustus Caesar. There you go. You got it. All right. But the thing is, Julius Caesar didn't do that. That was people later on say he's great. You know, some people would name it like a whole Kennedy Center after themselves while they're still alive. Some people are so, never mind. That is crazy. But anyway, really, the similarities are striking. Let's just say that. Okay. We'll just say that. I don't know. So what he did was he changed November into Domitianus and December into Germanicus. That was his middle name, essentially. So while he was alive, he had one of the months in the calendar named. The arrogance of this guy. Now, if he was a great, if he was Julius Caesar, if Julius Caesar had named July after himself, he could almost pull it off. You know what I'm saying? Because he was an amazing emperor. But Domitian, I mean, who's he? All right, okay, he defeated Vitellius. Okay, I'll give him credit. All right, read Suetonius. He'll tell you everything you need to know about Domitian. All right, so he changed the set time and the laws. All right, it says in this passage, it says he will attempt to change the set times and the laws. Now, Rome had the most famous law in the ancient world. In fact, France and most of South America actually is under what's called Roman law. We have common law, English common law. And Domitian, this prideful person, said, ah, we're going to get rid of Roman law, so now we're going to have Domitian law. Okay? So he attempted to change the set times and the law. The day he died, they ripped Germanicus and Domitianus out of the calendar. They put back the Roman law in place. So how did Daniel in 558 BC know that it would be the 11th emperor of Rome, when Rome wasn't even an empire, never mind having emperors, that he would wipe out three previous kings? He would try to set change the set times and laws. All right, how did he know that? Now remember, we talked about Daniel sort of being the fighting ground for the idea of the Bible being inspired by God. Remember how people tried to undermine that? Mm-hmm. Which prophecies about who do they try to undermine? Remember the chief audience of the book is who and when? A little bit too vague for me here. Close. It's the time of Antiochus Epiphanes, 167 to 164 BC. So what they're saying is, Daniel was written after that, like maybe 150 BC. Okay, let's just say that it was. Well, how did Daniel, if that's true, in other words, it's a fake book with no actual real prophecies, it's just somebody trying to write this fake thing to pretend you prophesied, how do they explain Daniel 7? That's exactly right. They act as if this never happened. So, that's interesting. So, that's Daniel chapter 7. Okay. Then there's Daniel 8. I go till what? If I go like 5 minutes long and then 5 minutes short later, because I got five things to cover. Yeah, so we'll do three things now. A little bit longer now, a little bit shorter in the next section. Okay, great. So let's do Daniel 8. Now, that's impressive, wouldn't you say? Yes. And having seen that prophecy and seen the interpretation, is there any room, is there the slightest room for doubt about the inspiration, at the very least, of Daniel? I mean, I don't know. What about Esther 5, verse 4? Is that inspired? Can I prove Esther 5, verse 4 is inspired? You gotta create the general idea. You know, there's the general idea of the whole Bible being inspired. And if you have enough evidence, at some point you kind of go, all right, yeah, it's looking pretty good, okay? This is looking pretty good. Daniel 8. All right, Daniel 8 is the vision of the ram with two horns and the goat with one big horn. All right, and really, this and Daniel 11 are the main thing that Daniel's about. Remember I said the audience of Daniel is the Jews suffering extreme persecution in the 2nd century BC under Antiochus Epiphanes. In the third year of King Belshazzar's reign, so it's just 2 years later, I guess it's 551 BC now, I, Daniel, had a vision after the one that had already appeared to me. My vision I saw in the citadel of Susa in the province of Elam. In the vision I was beside the Ulai Canal. There is Susa. There's the Ulai Canal. If you're looking from Susa across the Ulai Canal, you're looking to the west. Persepolis and Susa were the two main capitals of the Persian Mede Empire. Daniel's not in Babylon. Actually, he is in Babylon. But in his dream, he's in Susa. All right? I looked up, and there beside me was a ram with two horns. A ram with two horns. All right, standing beside the canal. The horns were long. One of the horns was longer and the other but grew up later. And these two horns are Persia and Media. Now, in the earlier history, before Cyrus, it was Media and Persia. But after Cyrus, it was Persia and Media. Cyrus the Persian, right? And our Persian friends are so proud of Cyrus, as they should be. All right, the Sassanid and the history of Iran is an amazing history. All right, and the Iranian people are proud for a reason. They got a lot to be proud of in their history. But anyway, all right. Keep going. Yeah, one of the horns was longer than the other, but grew up later. That longer, later one is Persia. Got it? I watched the ram as it charged to the west, the north, and the south. What were those three kingdoms that Persia absorbed? Lydia, Babylon, Egypt. To the west, Lydia is basically Turkey today. To the north, Babylon, and to the south, Egypt. Not only does he get the three kingdoms correct, but even has the three directions correct. No animal could stand against it, and none could rescue from his power, and it did as it pleased when it became great. By the way, this prophecy is not as impressive as you might think. Because this prophecy was given in 551 BC, and Cyrus became king in 550 BC. So it's not like that crazy. You know, it's not that amazing a prediction. Oh, but wait till we get later on. Okay. As I was thinking about this, suddenly a goat with a prominent horn between its eyes came from the west. Oops. See, when it rains, it pours. Okay. Okay. Just one, please. There you go. All right. Crossing the whole earth without touching the ground. This is a beautiful metaphorical picture of Alexander the Great, who charged from the west, of course, crossing the whole earth without touching the ground. It came towards the two whom ran I've seen standing beside the canal. It charged at it in great rage. That's Darius III, the last emperor of Persia. I saw it attack the ram furiously, striking the ram, shattering its two horns. The ram was powerless to stand against it. The goat knocked it to the ground, trampled on it. None could rescue the ram from its power. The goat became very great, and but at the height of its power, the large horn was broken off, and in its place four prominent horns grew up towards the four winds of heaven. Would you be surprised to know that this is exactly what happened? By the way, the Jews tell the story, and this is found in Josephus, that when Alexander came to Jerusalem on his way to conquering Egypt, they showed him a copy of the book of Daniel, in which basically said, yeah, you're the goat with the prominent horn. He said, okay, cool. And the Greek Empire is always, before Antiochus Epiphanes, the Greek empires treated the Jews with special honor and gave them all kinds of privileges. Because of Daniel 8, I think, anyway. All right. Pretty cool. The year was 323 BC. All right. So Alexander crossed the Dardanelles Strait with 30,000 troops. They literally burned their boats. Alexander, 30,000 troops. Persia, 200,000 troops. 2 years later, the entire Persian Empire wiped out by Alexander the Great. Arguably the greatest general who ever lived. But at the age of in 323 BC, at the age of, it's not in my notes, at the age of something like 32 or 35, Alexander died. His wife, Roxanne, was pregnant. She was from Bactria, which would be Afghanistan today. And so he had no successors. He was in his early 30s. So what happened was, over the next 3 or 4 years, all of his great generals fought it out. And guess how many dynasties emerged. Well, let's read the prophet. It says it right here, right? It says, the goat became very great, but at the height of his power, the large horn was broken off. 323 BC. And in its place, four prominent horns grew up towards the four winds of heaven. So guess how many great dynasties emerged from the Alexandrian conquest? The answer is exactly four. There they are. Antigonus, Cassander, Lysimachus, and Ptolemy. Ptolemy is the one that we might be most aware of. The Ptolemies ruled in Egypt. And by the way, in Daniel 11, those will be the kings of the south. Have you ever read Daniel 11? The king of the south goes out against the king of the north and does this and takes out his temple and then his blah, blah, blah. It's like, what's he talking about? I'll tell you exactly what he's talking about. I can give name, date, time, city, everything. Because Daniel 11 is a fantastically precise chronicle of the entire history of the wars between, there's the fifth horn. Let's talk about that fifth horn. Okay, here we go. Out of one of them, by the way, the answer is out of Ptolemy. Of the four, the most powerful was Antigonus, who ruled over Persia, Afghanistan, parts of Pakistan. And so Ptolemy sent a general, his name was Seleucus. He sent Seleucus to attack the lands of Antigonus in Syria. All right? So let's read about that. Let's read the history of that war. You know, like 300 years before it happened is when it was written down. Sort of cool. All right, here we go. Out of one of them came another horn, which started small but grew in power to the south and to the east and toward the beautiful land. It grew until it reached the hosts of the heavens. It threw some of the starry hosts down to the earth. This is apocalyptic language right now because this is the day of the Lord. All right? It set itself up to be as great as the commander of the army of the Lord. It took away the daily sacrifice of the Lord. His sanctuary was thrown down. Because of rebellion, the Lord's people and the daily sacrifice were given over to it. It prospered in everything it did, and truth was thrown to the ground. All right, this is Seleucus, the general of Ptolemy, who defeated Antigonus, and he took what we would call Syria. And he said, why should I give Syria to Ptolemy? I'm going to start my own little dynasty. And then it grew. How? What was the path of conquest of Seleucus and his successors? It grew first to the south. He took Mesopotamia. And then to the east. He took Persia. And then to the beautiful land. The beautiful land. What would the beautiful land be of reference to? Oh, Canaan, the promised land. By the way, Seleucus himself did not take the promised land from Ptolemy. It was actually his grandson, or is it great-grandson? His name was Antiochus. Not Antiochus Epiphanes, Antiochus the Great. Somewhere around 210 BC, Antiochus took Palestine, Judea, from the Ptolemies. All right, all described, but then, all right, it grew to be the host of heavens, and eventually the Seleucids became the greatest of all the Greek powers, rivaling the Ptolemies, set itself to be the commander of the army of the Lord, took away the daily sacrifice. All this, like I said, is recorded in 1 Maccabees. I wish I'd brought my New American Bible, because at this point I'd be reading 1 Maccabees chapter 1, verse 41 through 54, that describes how Antiochus's son, Antiochus Epiphanes, after being defeated and fighting against the Ptolemies in Egypt and the Romans intervening, we'll learn about that in chapter 11, he comes back and he takes revenge on the Jews. And what he tried was to suppress Judaism. He became an anti-Semite, if you will. And so what he did was, as I mentioned earlier, he slaughtered pigs and smeared their blood all over the holy place and the most holy place. He ended all sacrifices. And what's it say here? Jesus called it the abomination of desolation in Matthew. Right? Let me see. It says, oh yeah, that's going to be mentioned in Daniel 11. I'll tell you what it is now. Basically, what he did was he put a statue right above the Holy of Holies, right above, you know, where the ark would have been. And the face on the statue was not Zeus, it was Antiochus Epiphanes. That is the abomination of desolation. All right? Verse 57. That's right. Let me go forward. All right. Let me see. Oh, yeah. That's in 1 Maccabees 1, verse 57. But Antiochus setting up the abomination of desolation. Now, let's read on. Because of rebellion. Why did this happen? Why did Antiochus Epiphanes go after and suppress Judaism, desecrate the temple, put an end to sacrifice, make the observance of circumcising your children illegal? Why did he do that according to this passage? It says it right there. Why did, it's right there. You can read it in that verse. Why did God do that? Why did God allow the abomination of desolation to be set up to allow the ending of sacrifice, the desecration of his temple? Why? Can I narrow it down for you? Okay. Verse 12. Because of rebellion. Because of whose rebellion? Yeah, I mean, read the book of Judges. If you want to know what happens when we rebel against God and we turn to idolatry, what God does, this is just kind of normal stuff. Now, again, I try to get you to imagine. Let's say you're one of these Jews. Would you have circumcised your male children? All right? Would you have continued to live like a Jew? He basically built a gymnasium right there in Jerusalem. And they would have their athletic contests and they would compete in the nude. So whether you're circumcised or not was something that would kind of be sort of revealed. You know what I'm saying? All right. But we're going to read in Daniel 11 how some of the wise people responded to that. You know, if we're rebellious, prideful, arrogant, think we're something great, God is going to judge us. And I'd say he already did, you know. Those people in Around Forever kind of go, yeah, God kind of, yeah, he kind of cut us the size a little bit, you know? I remember that. You weren't even born. us old people, we talk about it too much, maybe, probably. We're just too caught up in it because, you know, that's a long time ago. Hey, let's just move forward, amen? But here's the thing is, because of this event, the Jews, like I said, had the time of their greatest flowering spiritually and politically from the time of David. All right, this is when those Hasidim, the holy ones, who eventually became the Pharisees, but never mind that. You know, God is in control. Why did this happen? Because the Jews had not been faithful. After this terrible persecution, Judaism had one of its greatest revivals, both politically and spiritually, in its entire history. The Hasidim took religious power in Israel, etc. Now, let's skip down, all right? Well, actually, let me read the rest of the thing, and then I'll skip to verse 23 through 25. Then I heard a holy one speak, verse 13, and another holy one said to him, how long will it take for the vision to be fulfilled? The vision concerning the daily sacrifice, the rebellion that causes desolation, the surrender of the sanctuary, and the trampling underfoot of the Lord's people. He said to me, it will take 2,300 evenings and mornings, then the sanctuary will be reconsecrated. 2,300 evenings and mornings, that's 1,150 days. All right, so let's see. What are the kind of the facts there? There's Seleucus the Great, Seleucus rather the first, the one who set up this whole dynasty. Southeast, beautiful land. All right, become very strong, take away the daily sacrifice, set up the abomination of desolation, Daniel 11:31, because of rebellion. All right, there you can go. You can read 2 Maccabees 7, verse 1 about the whole family being killed. All right, how long? All right, 2,300 evenings. Now, it turns out that we know the exact date of the reconsecration is December 25th, 164 B.C. We know that is because that's when Hanukkah Of course, Hanukkah moves. It's a lunar calendar. But in the year 164 BC, Hanukkah would be December 25th. We don't know the exact day that the temple was desecrated, sometime in November 167. So roughly 3 years, 1.5 months was the length of time of this horrible persecution. All right? Which is 1,150 days, give or take about 5 or 10 days, because got that? He prophesied the exact length. Now imagine you're one of the Jews. It's been 1,134 days. You're like, all right, okay, I think I can hold out for 16 more days, because you understand that God's in control. Daniel prophesied not only that this would happen and what would happen, but he prophesied the length of time. And of course, this event, the Maccabean rebellion, in which they kicked the troops of Antiochus Epiphanes out of Jerusalem, is what's celebrated as Hanukkah, right? Great stuff. All right, let's read verse 23 through 25. In the latter part of their reign, when rebels had become completely wicked, a fierce-looking king, a master of intrigue, will arise. He will become very strong, but not by his own power. It's going to be by God's power. Right? Daniel and even Nebuchadnezzar said, God puts in and he takes out whatever he wants. All right? He will cause astounding devastation. He will succeed in whatever he does. He will destroy those who are mighty, the holy people. He will cause deceit to prosper, and he will consider himself superior. When they feel secure, he will destroy many and take his stand against the prince of princes. Yet, he will be destroyed, but not by human power. The vision of the evenings and mornings that has been given to you is true, but seal the vision for concerns the distant future. All right, so now after the break, we're going to do Daniel 9, Daniel 11, Daniel 12. All right, so take a break. So the last lesson will be about 35 minutes.